Blog Talk Radio.
I am the nation. I was born on July 4th, 1776, and the Declaration of Independence is my birth certificate. The bloodlines of the world run in my veins because I offered freedom to the oppressed. I am many things and many people. I am the nation. I am 200 million living souls and the ghost of millions who have lived and died for me. I am Nathan Hale and Paul Revere. I stood at Lexington and fired the shot heard round the world. I'm Washington, Jefferson, Patrick Henry. I'm John Paul Jones, the Green Mountain Boys, and Davy Crockett. I'm Lee and Abe Lincoln. I remember the Alamo, the Maine, and Pearl Harbor. When freedom called, I answered and stayed until it was over there. I left my heroic dead in Flanders fields and in the steaming jungles of Vietnam. I am the Brooklyn Bridge, the wheatlands of Kansas, and the granite hills of Vermont. I am the coal fields of the Virginias and Pennsylvania, the fertile lands of the West, the Golden Gate and Grand Canyon. I sprawl from the Atlantic to the Pacific, 3 million square miles. I'm more than 3 million farms. I'm forest, field, mountain, and desert. I'm quiet villages, and I'm cities that never sleep. You can look at me and see Ben Franklin walking down the streets of Philadelphia. I'm Babe Ruth in the World Series. I'm 130,000 schools and colleges and 326,000 churches where my people worship God as they please. I'm a ballot dropped in a box. I am an editorial in a newspaper. And I'm a letter to a congressman. I'm Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein. I'm Horace Greeley, Will Rogers, and the Wright brothers. I'm George Washington Carver, Daniel Webster, and Jonas Salk. I'm Walt Whitman, Thomas Paine, Tom Sawyer, and Walt Disney. Yes, I am the nation, and these are the things that I am. I was conceived in freedom, and God willing, in freedom I'll spend the rest of my days. May I possess always the integrity, the courage, and the strength to keep myself unshackled, to remain a citadel of freedom and a beacon of hope to the entire world. I am the nation.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Patriot Education. My name is Terry Rowland, and I am your hostess for this evening. And as always, we are brought to you through the good offices of www.patriotfamilies.com, a great group of people who truly do believe and act upon the fact that we are the nation. Our topic for tonight, ladies and gentlemen, is a very sad one. It is Sandy Hook Elementary. How do we process this tragedy for ourselves and for our children? I'm listening to and watching experts on everything, pundits, politicians, talking heads, for a week now, discussing the tragic death of 28 people in Newtown, Connecticut last Friday morning. I've heard guesses on reasons and diatribes against guns and demands that we put God back in school and blame games on everything from video games to bad parenting to the mental health system to, Lord knows, probably contaminants in the water and over-medication of the mentally ill. It is the nature of human beings to want to know why. It is that intense curiosity and that desire for an explanation of our universe that is both a curse and a blessing to our species. That need to know why has created steam power and the internal combustion engine and electricity and sent us to the moon and cameras to Mars and spaceships outside our own solar system voyaging the galaxy. But it also frustrates us and angers us because many times when we ask why, there is no answer that we can understand. In this particular incident, with this tragedy, as with many of the others that we have heard about and witnessed the after effects of over the last 10 to 15 years, is that we cannot know why a person who is mentally ill, crazy, or evil, or all three, would take out his wrath and his anger on children. It's possible for us to understand why someone who is angry at the life he dealt him, choosing to take others out of this life who had his or her mind damaged him in some way, or put a barrier between him and success of any kind, or bullied him or her, or hurt him or her emotionally or physically. We can, even though we cannot condone that kind of action, we can at least understand its motivation. We cannot understand the workings of a mentally deranged mind. If we could, we too would be mentally deranged in the same way. This week, I had several children in my in-school suspension room on Tuesday and Wednesday, and the topic came up, as I expected it would, of the tragedy in Connecticut. And the children talked, and so did I. And we talked about the fact that we wanted to know why. How could somebody do that? And as I said to the kids, I don't know. I cannot understand, and I never will, what could drive a person to do this kind of insane and evil act. Our why is not going to get answered. There'll be speculation and blame and suggestions for preventing such tragedy from happening. But none of those things will give us a definitive answer why. I am of the opinion that evil does exist in this world and that it gets acted out through the minds and hands of human beings. Whether that evil comes from without, as in the belief in Satan or demonic forces, or whether it comes from within, a malfunction in the brain and the heart that eliminates the ability to empathize with anyone and cuts off any access to the development of a conscience. I don't know, and I don't believe that I ever will, while I inhabit this dimension of time, this physical body, and this, admittedly, fairly usable brain. But I am not God, ladies and gentlemen. And as far as I know, the position isn't open. Even if it were, I'm certainly not going to submit my resume. What we need to take from this tragedy is not focus on the frustration of why and its inability to be answered, but understanding that in our real world, evil acts are done, evil people exist, and sometimes the innocent suffer from the fact that life is not safe. We, as adults, do everything in our power, if we are decent individuals, to protect and teach and help our children to reach adulthood with ethics and moral values that will make them a treasure and the movers of our future toward a better world. We, like the teachers and administrators and staff at Sandy Hook Elementary, put in place as many precautions as we can possibly imagine without making our children feel incarcerated in Alcatraz. The people at Sandy Hook did everything right. They had an extremely good security system, in that guests were required to come through the front door. All other doors were locked to outside entry. They had video cameras. They had a buzz-in situation where the incoming guest had to be recognized from the office and allowed in. They did everything they could to protect the children under their care. But all it took was one young man with weapons and absolutely no conscience. We cannot ladies and gentlemen, get into the minds of one another and read each other's thoughts and emotions. We cannot prevent insanity or evil. We can only try our best to deal with the consequences in as positive and nurturing and forward-looking way as we can. One of the ways I explained this to the students was that since last Friday, millions of people around the world have expressed their condolences, their shock, their horror, and their compassion for the families and the victims. People left flowers and teddy bears and notes of sympathy at the door of the American Embassy in Moscow and many other places around the world. Facebook, YouTube, MySpace, chat rooms all over, radio shows, internet, social networking. The outrage, the horror, the sorrow has been so freely expressed that it gives me a reason to keep going, because millions of people found this act horrifying, disgusting, heartbreaking, and one individual was responsible for doing it. Human beings are much more likely to feel compassion and kindness and horror at acts like these than they are to run out and commit more. Unfortunately, there will always be people whose desire for notoriety or revenge against the world that they feel has cheated them or treated them badly will tip over into the insanity that says, it's okay for me to take other lives because my life is so miserable. It never is okay to do that. But, as I said, there will always be people who believe that their desires and their hurts and their pains are more important than the life or the happiness or the health of anyone around them. I have worked with autistic children in a professional capacity. There has been a lot of comment about people who have autistic members of their families and those who work with the autistic people on autism spectrum are upset and angry that this aspect of this young man has been mentioned, even though there has been no definitive documentation to show that he suffered from any of the autism spectrum disorders. They believe that they are being unfairly targeted as potentially violent people. Well, I am going to be very realistic and very honest with you, ladies and gentlemen. One of the aspects of autism is the autistic individual has a great deal of difficulty relating to other people. The autistic individual lacks the sort of empathy that the neurologically normal possess. He or she sees the world and reacts to it in the same way that an infant does. Because in the autistic brain, the pathways of thought, reaction to stimuli, and interpersonal relationships do not easily change, develop, and proceed as a child grows. A normal child loses infantile patterns as new patterns are laid down by interacting with parents, siblings, pets, friends, school, teachers. New patterns of behavior, new understanding of how we relate are laid in, and gradually those patterns of infancy that see the world as me and me alone and I want now, scream, 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 are overlaid by what we call polite or socially acceptable behaviors. For the autism spectrum, that overlay is very difficult to induce. It takes 24/7 years of training, modeling, role-playing, and counseling, and professional help to get an autistic person to be able to relate on any level that approaches normal when it comes to society and its members. I'm not particularly fond of most of the people that I have met who are on the autism spectrum. That does not mean that I am cruel or unkind or lacking in compassion. As I said, I have worked with autistic people. I was in one-on-one aid to an autistic youngster for 2 years. I cared about him because he was a human being and because he needed my help and because he wanted help but didn't know how to ask for it. I spent a great deal of time laying in new patterns that worked at school. They didn't work at home, ladies and gentlemen. This particular person tried to kill his sister at least 4 times during the 2 years when I worked with him. But his mother tried and tried to get her insurance company and the schools to document so that he could get some residential behavioral and academic training where he would be given the help he needed. But it was denied to her because his behavior in school was excellent. Other than a few temper tantrums that resulted in tears, never once at school did he display or exhibit any tendencies toward violence. It has been said that the gunman at Newtown may perhaps have had Asperger's syndrome, but that there is no record of any kind that he had acted in a violent way. No documentation. But because there was no documentation does not mean that his behaviors at home were quiet, amenable, and nonviolent. I speak from experience, ladies and gentlemen, because I knew a person whose behavior at school did not in any way indicate a tendency toward violence. And his mother was stymied at every turn because she knew he needed more help than a one-on-one paraprofessional trailing through school with him all day and counseling. It may very well be that the shooter's mother faced a similar situation. Now, this does not excuse the act. Nothing, ladies and gentlemen, anywhere on the mental health disorder spectrum excuses or mitigates the evil of shooting 28 people, 20 of whom were 6- and 7-year-olds. It's one speculation about that unanswerable why. I've also heard the left screaming about how we must eliminate guns, because if there were no guns, things like this would never happen. We tend to forget that in 1927, in Bath, Michigan, a school board treasurer placed a bomb in a school, detonated it, killing more than 50 people, most of whom were children, and then set off a bomb in his automobile that killed another 50-plus of the first responders who came to help. Nor does it change the fact, in spite of the left, that anywhere on the Internet you can figure out and find out precise instructions, even in English and not just Arabic, on exactly how to construct such a bomb. Eliminating weapons, eliminating guns, will not prevent insane people from wanting to do damage to as many people as they can. It will merely force them to use other methods than handguns, rifles, or semi-automatic or automatic weapons. It may not be as quick and easy to kill many, many people face to face and right there with them, but a bomb a bomb, ladies and gentlemen, or an airplane into the Twin Towers kills a lot more than 28. And getting rid of guns will not eliminate the insanity that creates acts like this. I also heard many people on the right claiming that the reason acts like this happen is because we no longer teach God in school. We have taken God out of school. No, we haven't. We can't take God out of anything because we are not God. God is with human beings everywhere they go, within them. Spiritual education and its moral and ethical values need to be taught at home, ladies and gentlemen, by families who share belief systems within which they can explain the why of how we treat one another. Our schools are not religious institutions, ladies and gentlemen. They were never intended to be. They are there to educate our children academically. Why is prayer not allowed in school? It isn't because the average American wishes to eliminate the average American, and over 90% of Americans believe in God, knows that you can't eliminate God. 90% of Americans understand that we take God with us wherever we go. Most of them also understand that every single individual sees God in a different way. And each of those ways has basically one idea in common. Do unto others as you would be done by. Different belief systems have differing ideas of who is my neighbor, as in the parable of the Good Samaritan. But in general, the idea is that you have a duty to yourself and to others to treat your fellow human beings as you would be treated. That cannot wait until a child is six and in first grade. That must be taught from the day that child is born. I have heard people discuss and blame our mental health system because we have believed that individual liberty is our paramount right. In the 1960s, our state-run mental institutions were prohibited from involuntarily committing anyone without a court order and evidence that the individual was dangerous to him or herself or to others. As we have seen in this current tragedy, there was no paper trail, no criminal record that would have indicated that the gunman in Newtown contemplated such violence or had exhibited a desire to commit violent acts. There was no court order. The anger and fear one feels and depression one can enter when one loses a loved one, a melancholy that lasts longer than some psychologist says it ought to, without those protections, could get someone confined to a mental hospital. That was the reason for the change in the way we deal with mental illness. Part of the reason that those rules were put in place was to remove the stigma of mental illness. This goes all the way back to Dorothea Dix, sorry about the mistake on her first name, who in the very early 1800s was a crusader for help for the people who were mentally ill. At that time, a person with a mental illness was locked in the cellar. And no one mentioned it, because madness was a thing of the devil. They were possessed by a demon, and they must be sequestered from everyone else, lest their demon get out and infect other people. We as a nation, ladies and gentlemen, always want to have our cake and eat it too. We want to protect our children and our fellow citizens and ourselves from every danger and every conceivable evil. And we still want freedom of choice and individual liberty. And you cannot have both of those things at the same time. The only way that our children can be protected from acts like this would be to construct schools that resemble Alcatraz or San Quentin, with armed guards and bars and locked gates and files and lines and incarceration in classrooms that are basically solitary confinement cells. I don't think any parent would want that for their child. Looks like we have a caller on the line. Let's see who's trying to reach us today. Hello.
Jerry Robo.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
No, it's Robert.
Oh, it's Robert. Sorry, Robert. Didn't recognize your voice. How you doing, dear?
I'm doing good. I wanted to wish everybody, since tomorrow's the supposedly the last day.
Yes, and tomorrow's my birthday, too. I'm going to have a great birthday, aren't I?
Is it really?
It really is. I've been laughing about that for the last 2 years. And you know the funny part? I will reach my retirement age tomorrow. So, you know, the end of the world is coming. I don't need to collect Social Security.
Wow. Right before the fiscal cliff.
You got it. I was born at a good time, wasn't I, dear?
Yes, you were. You made it. That's a feat in itself.
I did.
You made it. Well, you made it, girl. I'm proud of you.
Well, thank you, sir. I'm kind of proud of me, too.
Mm. Oh, wow. I have one. What is it? Is it 62 retirement?
66. 66 for people my age.
Well, I have, 9 more years left?
Well, you're a youngster. You're a mere boy.
Oh, please.
That's a term of endearment, not an insult. Trust me.
I know that. I know Thursdays were really bad today, but, you know, I figured since this is the last Thursday before the new year, before Christmas, I thought I'd give you a shot.
I think they're bound to get better. And if nothing else, you've got me to look forward to on Thursday evenings, Robert.
believe me. What my father used to say, there's always the light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, thank you. I'm honored to be thought of as a light at the end of tunnel. Thank you, kind sir.
No, I mean, I'm trying to give encouragement to everybody.
Uh-huh.
We got to keep our chins up. That's all we can do.
Yes, we do. As I mentioned earlier on the show, a lot of my kids and I were talking about Patty in Newtown. And I was also talking a moment ago about the fact that the only way to protect our kids is to keep them in a prison. And most parents wouldn't like it. And it's kind of interesting. Today, part of my duty, because I did not have any ISS students. When that's the case, I am usually sent to cover for missing teachers if we don't have substitutes or fill in the office or do whatever is needed. Well, this week we instituted a new sign-in procedure for visitors and parents. We have tables set up at our front door, and incoming adults must sign in and show an ID before they are allowed to go any further, and then they are sent directly to the main office. And from there, if they've come to pick up a child or whatever, the child is called up to the office to be dismissed. And I was talking to some of the other staff members, and they've said many of the parents have been really fussing and fuming and complaining about this on Facebook, making snide remarks about the school doing real stupid stuff, because it will never happen here. And yet most of the parents that I saw this morning, and this morning was when I was on the duty, when I asked them for ID, they said, and I said, I'm sorry for the inconvenience. He said, that's all right. Believe me, we understand, and thank you. And I reminded a couple of them that I'm on the front lines by that front door. Part of my job is to hope that if somebody comes in with guns blazing, it'll be noisy enough when he kills me that they can dial 911 or get the school resource officer, and he won't get to the kids.
And you know, I was on the show of Ross Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point in time, Terry, I was numb. I was, you know, I told Rod, I said, I'm beginning to lose faith in human nature.
And Rob, I understand that feeling.
I mean, if this is a government plot, if this is a coincidental thing that two fathers are testifying in the same trial.
I found that an interesting coincidence. I really don't think it's a conspiracy. I think it's one of those unsuspected synchronicity kind of moments, and that 3 degrees or 6 degrees of separation kind of thing. Oh, by the way, Rod says to tell you hello.
Hello, Rod. He's always a kid that always tells me hello. Hello, Rod. A Merry Christmas, everybody.
Well, thank you, sir, and a Merry Christmas.
And healthy, happy New Year.
We'll have one. One of the things that I've been worried about since the Sandy Hook disaster is not so much the grief, and it is great grief, and not so much because it relates to what I do for a living more closely than most of the major disasters we hear about on the news. But I've lived a fairly long life so far, and I have heard about Columbine and I've been struck by that, and I have witnessed many different kinds of horrendous things, both natural disasters, mechanical failures like the space shuttle blowing up, acts of violence, and cruelty. I have known about these things, and I have known also, because I've managed to live my life as long as I have, that there is no way that being alive can be made safe, comfortable, content, and happy 24/7 for as long as we're here. And I reiterate this mainly because I think because we are, by nature, a gregarious species, because we need another in more ways than just physical things.
Right.
We sometimes think of a horrible thing as being the norm, and it's not. Particularly now, 100 years ago, horrible acts were taking place regularly all over the world, but we did hear about them 5 minutes later. They weren't in our living room in pictures. We didn't hear the sounds of the gunfire on our car radio. We didn't get the visceral hit. It's going back to when I was young and Vietnam. That was the first war that was in people's living rooms while they were eating dinner. We saw actual people die, not in a theater, in a newsreel where you could keep the kids out of it, but in our own homes, and death and destruction and horror became intimately real, and almost minute to minute. There was a delay during the Vietnam years, but now there isn't one. It was all over the news 25 to 30 minutes after it began and ended. It's much more real, much more viscerally stunning, much more, hey, that could happen to me, because it's as if it is happening to you.
It is.
And that
it is. I help my friend take care of a high-function girl, right? Mm-hmm. She has cerebral palsy, Terry. Mm-hmm. And you know, to make everything kosher, I had to get a criminal background check. For the state.
Yes.
And that's number one. Mm-hmm. And then today we had their Christmas party, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they wanted me to sit in the back seat with two high function girls. I said to myself, no. I'm not going to sit in the back seat of my car with two fucking girls. Did I make the right decision?
You did, Robert. You are a gentleman and very bright. I had to have a background check also when I signed up as a substitute, and when I and it was still good when I went to work full time for the school system. We do that in 99% of school districts across this country. You can't work in a school without a background check, a criminal background check, and without being fingerprinted. You can't.
Exactly.
Our society, I think part of the reason this was so horrible, even worse than Columbine, because Columbine was students at the school killing other students. This is someone who had no discernible connection killing six-year-olds who could not possibly have harmed him in any way. We protect our children more than any other society in the history of mankind. We keep them as children longer than any other place in the world. We don't allow our children to be functioning adults, really, until they're 21 years old. This is extraordinarily protective. And I think that's another reason why so many of us were so horrified and so shocked and so grief-stricken, and why even our president, whom I have a very little opinion, could not maintain his actor's speaking demeanor when he talked about the tragedy. That wasn't glycerin. Those were real tears.
Oh.
Because he is a father. Anyone
sure.
who has a child or a grandchild or a niece or a nephew, the minute you hear of something like this, especially if they're close to that age, you see your child lying dead, covered in blood, with five or six bullet holes. It's an immediate, instinctive, gut-level human response. And it's cultural with us. There was a gentleman on one of Glenn Beck's programs on the Blaze TV this week. He was a minister. And he was talking about that aspect of the tragedy and its effect on making this even more horrifying than, oh, say, Columbine or the Colorado theater shooting. I said, and the reason it's so here, he said, I have traveled all over the world, and I have been in places where the death of a child is pretty much shrugged off because it's so common. It's not here. It's a rarity. And that's another thing that we need to remind one another of, and we need to remind our children of. This happens. But not every day, and not to everyone. This is not normal. It is not the usual thing. It is not something that you expect, and justifiably, because there are millions of people whose job it is to take care of, protect you, and keep you safe.
Wow.
Unfortunately.
It's just a horrific, useless, senseless. I mean, and then the connection with the mother with being a volunteer at the school, and supposedly she was going to put him in, committed.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that's the motor right there. I mean,
but I don't know whether you were listening when I was talking about the Asperger student that I worked with, and the trouble his mom had in trying to get him the kind of help he needed, because his behavior at home was violent. He attempted to kill his sister at least 4 times in the 2 years that I worked with him in school. And she tried to go through the school and go through the counselors and get him put into some kind of residential facility where he could get behavioral counseling as well as academic training, and it was denied because his behavior at school never was violent.
It was never violent in school, but only violent around his family.
That's right. And that may have been the case with this young man. And if there's no documentation, as I mentioned earlier, because of the changes in the way that we deal with mental illness, you cannot have a person committed involuntarily unless that person has demonstrated that he or she is a danger to himself or others and been committed by a judge. So criminal charges more or less have to be brought of some sort.
So,
otherwise,
so
you cannot get somebody committed.
Well, now people with Asperger's syndrome now are going to have a label now, Terry. Everybody with panic disorder, anxiety disorder.
Yes, anybody who is
diagnosed as such, is going to be labeled now.
Going to be considered a risk and a danger. And the unfortunate fact is that not all of them are. Not all of the people who are not suffering from some sort of behavioral problem are dangerous, but some of them are too. There isn't any way that we can understand the workings of a mentally dysfunctional mind unless we too are dysfunctional. You cannot empathize or understand the thinking patterns of someone whose thinking is so far off the norm as the man who killed those children. You can try to understand, but you never will be able to.
No. I mean, in my case, for instance, I was labeled as having anxiety disorder and panic disorder. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, that wasn't the case.
Mm-hmm.
Because three psychologists wouldn't write me letters of recommendation for grad school, period.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that wasn't the case. They knew something else was wrong.
Uh-huh.
They couldn't find out what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And my major professor said, once you get into grad school, you will find out what's wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, sure enough, Terry, I don't think you heard this, but sure enough, Terry, my second semester of biostatistics 2,
mm-hmm.
we're doing hypothesis testing. The first lecture was, a picture is worth 1,000 words. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when I was having, I kept on telling my docs that I was passing out, I was on the floor, they thought I was, faking all my illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And what was the case? I was diagnosed with cluster headaches.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Now, what does a guy like me do?
Mm-hmm.
See, it's not over until it's over.
Exactly. That's the difficulty with looking at and trying to fix blame or fix responsibility on everything but the person who actually committed the act. They're always looking to blame somebody, to give somebody the responsibility other than the individual, Robert. Put a label, stick a sticker on somebody. It's the desire that people have to categorize so they don't have to actually think about that person as another human being. We have dealt with this type of thinking ever since humanity has existed. We are in love with labels. We label everything. I even knew a gentleman who labeled all the spice jars in the cabinet. I mean, it was to that point. But we do this. And when we have a person who is diagnosed, correctly or incorrectly, with a mental illness, a behavioral disorder, a physical handicap that affects their ability to interact, immediately the label goes on, potentially dangerous, stay away. And that was one of the reasons why the changes were made in the way the mental health community was dealt with by the providers, because those labels were unfairly attached to the wrong people. Well, that was a good idea. But unfortunately, like we always do in this country, we take a good idea and run it to absurdity. Now we have people who cannot function on their own, who live on the streets, that we can't involuntarily commit where they'll be safe and warm and perhaps be able to be helped because we'll be violating civil liberties. It's the folly of our desire to somehow or other redesign the universe and our people, human beings, so that we are all perfect, nobody ever does, says, or even thinks anything bad about anybody else or anything else. The tragedies like this bring out both the best and the worst in people. There was a gentleman in Texas, who I believe is Thai, whose restaurant closed. He closed the restaurant because he started receiving death threats, because he put a post on Facebook in which he said, "I don't give up about a bunch of white kids getting killed." That was in the post. And his point, which he didn't make very carefully, was that all of a sudden everybody's up in arms about 20 children being killed when minority kids in the inner city are gunned down in drive-by shootings. Well, he had a legitimate point. But the way he phrased it and the attitude he displayed made him vilified by the millions of people who hurt for the families of these kids. They weren't in a ghetto in the midst of a drug war. They were in a first-grade classroom in a reasonably middle-class, suburban, idyllic environment. And it's an illustration to me, not of the fact that we ignore crime, but the fact that we cannot ignore that we cannot always predict who the criminal will be. It's not possible. Yeah, it's not possible to make life perfectly safe for anyone. God knows we try. The new protocol in school that I was part of today, and the fact that some of the parents were angry about them. They were angry that they had to stop, sign in, and show an ID before we let them into the school.
I had to show my driver's license, and my nursing assistant's license to even take my credits.
I know. I wear a badge every day, an ID badge. We're required to. That was told to me when I was hired, and when I was issued the badge. You wear this when you walk in that door, and you wear it all the time you're in school. The Sandy Hook people did everything within reason to protect the children under their care. We do everything we can in the school where I work to protect our kids, both from dangers of the outside and dangers within. We care about our children. We protect them. We do everything we can to keep them safe. And then we start screaming and howling and blaming everybody when the fact that life isn't safe rears its ugly head and stays safe. I am not in any way advocating that we should just care and not bother and, they can walk all over the place and anybody can come in. Sure, it's okay if we shoot people. No, that's the other end of the stick, and that's just as ridiculous. Taking common sense precautions, minimizing risks, yes. Eliminating risks entirely, that is not possible. Being alive is risk. Making independent choices is risk. Walking out of your front door or getting into your shower is a risk. What we have to learn from incidents like the Sandy Hook Elementary shooting is not how do we prevent this, because given the situation, there was no way it could have been prevented unless you went back and undid actions that had taken place over 20 years. 20 years. Being able to see the future when that young man was born and do everything to avoid anything that could set off a trigger that would make him do this. There is no way that we can do it. We have to understand that evil exists and that sometimes evil will have its way. It doesn't mean we should condone it, excuse it, feel sorry for it, or encourage it. But it does mean that we must be honest with our kids and let them know that evil things happen and pray God with luck and management that won't happen to them. But because evil things happen does not mean you crawl in a closet and hide. Because there are risks in everything. We have to remember the value of courage. And I don't mean the kind of courage that charges into a machine gun nest and gets killed saving his troop. That's a wonderful kind of courage. I mean the kind of courage that keeps on going in difficult times, that shoulders burdens that may be a little too heavy because they help someone you love, that doesn't complain when you don't get to have the new sneakers you wanted because daddy lost his job. We need to encourage, literally, encourage our kids. Teach them about courage, not just physical courage, but moral, ethical, and emotional courage. To deal with sorrow that life will bring them, we can hope and pray and believe with all our hearts that we can protect them from these sorrows, but we cannot. All we can do is be there to comfort when the sorrows arise. And one of the greatest things that I have seen over this last week is, as I said a few moments ago, the millions of people who have reached out to comfort the families of those adults and children who were killed, to offer something as simple as my school did, a card to the city of Newtown, signed by all the staff, expressing our compassion, our grief, and our prayers. Teddy bears and flowers left outside the door of the American Embassy in Moscow. Letters, cards, Facebook posts, funds collected for memorials. Bikers lining up to prevent the Westboro Baptists from disrupting the funerals of the victims of this tragedy. Those things remind me that there are many more good, decent, compassionate people in this world than there are people like the young man who committed this heinous act. It's that we need to remind our children of. Some of them will be afraid. I heard from a woman at school today that there have already been rumors running around among the high school kids that somebody's going to bring a gun into the high school tomorrow as a, you know, 1 week anniversary of it, and a lot of them are scared to go to school. And I doubt very much that anybody will, but this is teenagers. This is the attention-seeking false bravado of the belief that you're invulnerable when you're 16 or 15. It's the great cannon fodder because I can't die, the other guy will, but I won't. We can't let ourselves be 15-year-olds because we've got to be adult for the kids who are 15-year-olds. We can't buy into the media garbage about screaming that everybody should be denied a gun because things like this won't happen if we just eliminate all the guns. That's nonsense, and they know it. But it's a great political ploy. The far left has used emotion very effectively. That is their tool of choice. And to take a tragedy like this, a heartbreaking loss for people who had done nothing to deserve it, and use it to promote a political agenda sickens me.
I was just going to say that, Terry. You took the words right out of my mouth.
Great minds think alike.
I mean, when I heard what the president said, he said we just had two tragedies that now we should do what's good for the country because of the tragedies.
Well,
I shook my head in dismay, Terry. I mean, I was flabbergasted. What's another word I could use?
Kerfluzzled.
Dismayed.
Yeah, flummoxed is a good one. I kind of like flummoxed.
Oh my lord!
One of the problems we have, Robert, is that we can't license, link, and neuter political animals.
Hmm.
We're just letting them run free. And unfortunately,
I pray, I say Kaddish. I say Kaddish every night during Hanukkah. I said the morning prayer every day I taught it. You know, I had to do something. Yep. When I lit the candles, I didn't know what else to do.
You did what you needed to do, Robert. You did what was the right thing to do. None of us can go back and erase time and make it not happen. None of us can figure out, I don't care how high in office they are or how brilliant they think they are or they have been told they are. None of us can prevent such acts of evil from happening without completely losing our humanity and our freedom.
I mean, it can happen to any of us.
Yes, it could.
It can happen. I mean, even while I was USF, the one in the classroom environment at USF,
mm-hmm.
I mean, anyone could just go in there and just rake havoc. When the shooting at Virginia Tech was around, you know, I started becoming aware of my surroundings. I mean,
yes, sir.
Because we would get out of class late at night, you know, and it's mm-hmm. dark and you can't see, and you know, you just had to be aware. We would walk to our cars together. We would buddy up and, you know, protect each other. You know, we were frightened. I mean, it had an impact on us.
It does. But I remember after 9/11, I was working at the time at the racetrack, and
mm-hmm.
all of us. Because it was during the season when we had night racing. And all of us who worked those evening hours, and all of us who worked during the day, were skittish about it. Because who knew what other place with lots of people in it some idiot copycat terrorist type would choose to demonstrate the will of Allah. Any place where a great many people gathered was vulnerable. Many people were worried about going to football games or basketball games or riding subways or being in airports simply because it could have been any one of us working in one of those offices or walking the streets beneath those buildings. Any one of us. That's the same gut reaction of everyone is a parent. And who is a parent? They will see their own child in the faces of those dead kids. When a tragedy happens, every one of us understands the fragility of life. We don't think about it every day. If we did, we would be crazier than the gentleman who killed people. We would voluntarily become agoraphobic and lock ourselves in our house. We don't. We don't think about the danger in just being alive on a normal day. But when something like this happens, we realize just how vulnerable and how fragile we are. Earlier in the show, I was talking about those who said, well, it's all the fault of not having God in school. And I said, no, because God is in school. God is wherever you are, if you believe that He is there. He's there with you, or she, or it, or they, depending on your religious path. And school is not the place for religious and spiritual instruction. Home is. Well, when we feel that fragility of our life, like you did, Robert, we seek something beyond ourselves that will give us comfort and the feeling that our lives do have meaning, fragile as they are. More and more and more, after a tragedy, people go to church. The funeral and memorial services immediately after the tragedy and the funerals, they're being attended by thousands of people. Not because they want to gawk, but because they want to show their compassion and their sorrow and their grief. And they want to believe that none of us is born, lives, or dies in vain. One of our guests in the chat room, Mother Goose, saw a poem that described those children laughing as they ran into paradise and were embraced by Jesus. And it comforted her, and she wanted to find it again so she could share it with others. Many people are doing this. We turn to the divine, to the spiritual side of ourselves, when tragedies strike us, either personally, nationally, globally. It is our instinct. It's built in. We find that comfort, that solace, that justification for living and keeping on living in our spiritual beliefs, no matter what they are. And those spiritual beliefs don't come from school. They come from our churches and our parents and our grandparents and our brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles, our ministers, our rabbis, our holy men, our icons of generosity and giving, like Mother Teresa or Buddha or Muhammad, if you believe in the Sufi interpretation of the Quran. We look for comfort. And that actually is one of the positive side effects of something like this. Churches become more full when times are hard or when a great tragedy happens. And that illustrates to me that there is no way we could take God out of anything.
No.
We can't.
No way.
We can't.
No.
It's not about prayer in school. Nobody can stop me from praying in school. I do every day. The fact that I don't do it out loud and demand that everybody else join me is immaterial. It's not them I'm praying to.
That's it's amazing how you know they're playing religion so strongly. They're using it as a crutch to get people to use a religion to divide everybody. And they've done an excellent job. I mean, I just don't know how they get away with it. I can't comprehend, Terry, how this government that we presently have gets away with their antics of Chicago-style politics. I can't imagine how they get away with it. And I can't imagine that we're letting them get away with it. We're letting them win.
Human beings are very susceptible to the bread and circuses philosophy of government. All you got to do is look at Rome. So long as they can get something to which they feel they're entitled without working for it, they'll swallow anything so long as they get to eat the bait. And that's how this government is getting by without their doing. Looks like I've got another caller on the line. Hang on, Robert. We'll see who else wants to chip in today. Hello. Can you hear me?
Rob, everybody in our chat room.
Hey, Mr. Michael Abbey. How you doing, sir?
Good. I wasn't going to call in, Terry, and my wife is sitting here with me, and then Rod made a comment in the chat room. You know, if you go back to when our country was founded, and, you know, God was used to form this country. We have God-given inalienable rights. I mean,
that's correct.
God was used in school. There was prayer in school. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And this has, you know, whether you say, you know, you can't take it away from people because it's in people, okay? When you are not sharing your love
mm-hmm.
with other people, okay, then it has, something has to go into that void, Terry. If you're not putting love there, something is going to go into that void. My wife,
mm-hmm.
cook, and she has three beautiful kids that are in their 20s, and they were all homeschooled. And
mm-hmm.
my wife has been a spirit-filled Christian for almost 40 years. And
mm-hmm.
these kids are great. I mean, but they were given the attention. They were given the love. There's so
at
much...
At home.
At
love. Home, Michael.
At home.
Yes. Yes.
At home. But why can we not? Why have they taken even, you know, the Pledge of Allegiance out of our schools? I mean,
not mine. We do it every morning.
Well, you are a minority for sure.
Mm-hmm. We recite the pledge in school every morning, and followed by a moment of silence.
Because there's not very many that do that. And as far as
that.
And I don't want to take over the show. As far as, you know, there are lots of different religions and beliefs and this and that. Okay, the most widely published book in the world, and I'm sure you know what that is, Terry.
That is the Christian Bible.
You have that exactly right. You hit it on the nail. So if there was ever anything to put into school, that would be it. That's like saying we are America, okay, and having, you know, 100 million Chinese come over here and saying, well, we're going to change the language to Chinese now because there's a bunch of us over
mm-hmm.
here. No,
yep.
This is America, sorry, okay? This is our school. It's just a matter of having enough people stand up for what they want, but it's probably never, ever going to happen because there's too many people that have been dumbed down through the media, through medications, through lots of different things.
Well, you have to remember, Michael, that each and every one of us has a spiritual nature, and we seek answers in that realm in different ways. For those who believe in Christianity, that way is their way. For those who do not but believe in a different dogma or belief system, it doesn't mean that they don't believe in the same God. It's just their vision of that God is a little different from yours. When I say that we cannot take God out of the country, I'm not talking about God. That's been attempted. It's been attempted to politically correct us out of expressing our religious beliefs for fear that we'll offend those who do not share them or do not have any of their own. That is just as ridiculous as I can't describe what I like to eat because it might offend you that I like pork and you believe it's sinful to eat it. What I'm talking about is we cannot eliminate God any more than we can eliminate the Alpha Centauri galaxy. If you believe in God, God is wherever you are. God is everywhere if you believe in him or her or it or them. So we cannot denigrate or eliminate God. My point is that kind of teaching and spiritual growth has to be at home and in your church. It is not in the schools, not because God isn't there, but because the children in those schools have the right to follow the spiritual path of their families and not the one you think is right for yours. That's my argument, not the politically correct nonsense that talking about God offends people. I don't care if it offends people. If they're offended, that's their problem, not mine. I do not believe, however, that we are enjoined as human beings to force our religious beliefs on those who do not share them. It has nothing to do with God, okay? It has to do with us as people, because religious differences have been used to kill one another from time immemorial. We do not need to perpetuate that kind of thing. And remember, we're talking about children. Their cognitive abilities, their emotional abilities have not yet developed to adulthood. They are not yet ready for theological discussions. because they do not have the life experience, the mental or emotional maturity to be able to do so without anger or resentment when they disagree. Believe me, I know. I work with kids. And once somebody mentions their beliefs, then somebody else says, no, that's not true, and pretty soon you have a lot of argument. And nothing is learned except he's different and I don't like him because he told me my religion is wrong. I have seen this happen and I do not want it to go on. That doesn't eliminate God. Nothing can. It eliminates young children being pushed into arguing over matters that they are not grown up enough yet to be able to understand and share without damaging one another. Not offending, damaging one another.
I think we could probably agree that there is, you know, one word that defines God, mm-hmm. any God.
Mm-hmm.
Unless, you know, that God is some, you know, fairy tale character out of a you know, storybook, okay? God is love. And
yes,
children
sir.
Understand love.
They do. But they do not cognitively understand the different ways that that love is expressed in words and dogma, Michael. They aren't ready yet for that when they're 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, even 13 or 14. Love can be shown, okay? That they understand and that can do and do, okay? And you can discuss that. And show that in the way that you live. But when you tie it to and imply to a child that there is only one form of love in God's universe and from God, and only one definition of God, then you create more division. And we already have a president and a Senate that are doing their damnedest to divide us now. We don't need more division. Yes, sir.
There is no division in treating other people the way that you would like to be treated.
Exactly correct, sir. And if you had been listening earlier, you would know that I stated that that is common to every religious belief system. All of them. And it is that aspect of religion that needs to be emphasized. Not the specific dogma, not the specific church, not the specific holy book. That is for you to teach your children at home. I had another caller, but my computer is malfunctioning here, ladies and gentlemen. Excuse me. So if I'm not picking up your call, it isn't because I don't want to. It's just I can't get my studio screen to come back up. So my apologies. And I can't see my clock on the studio or the chat room, so pardon me. Leftover cold. I can't really respond very well, except to those I'm hearing on the phone, and I can't pull anybody in on the discussion. So believe me, I'm not ignoring you. I'm having computer troubles, but thank fortune Skype is still active, so I'm hoping you all can still hear me. So Robert and Michael, if you can still see the chat room, I hope everybody can hear me because I can't see it to find out whether or not they can. So,
yep, we can hear you fine.
Okay, and can the folks in the chat room hear me too?
Yes, I can, because I still have you on my speakers on my computer as well as a phone.
Okay, terrific. I was getting a little worried about that, and I know we only have about another 15 minutes, but I am not in any way, as you know, Michael, anti any religion. I do not believe, however, that our public education was put in place to teach religious values. It wasn't. Our founding fathers saw the public education that they envisioned as an opportunity for those who did not have great means to get the education that they could not afford to get, that their minds and abilities were capable of. They expected religious training to be done in church and at home. Bible reading was very common. The Jewish temples and the rabbis taught the children of the American Jews. in the temple. They had their classes in Hebrew and their bar mitzvahs, although bat mitzvahs really didn't come into vogue until the 20th century. But those rituals and beliefs and prayers and moral and ethical teachings were provided by other institutions and other people than the schools. School can explore many different religious belief systems from the academic point of view, but it cannot set itself up as a church or as a promoter of a specific belief system, even though the vast majority of our population do follow Christianity in one sect or another. We also have people who are devout Muslims who are not trying to blow us up. We have people who are Jewish who are not interested in being Shylock. We have people who are Baha'i, Hindu, Rastafarian, Native American, who worship God and see God and obey what they see as God's laws with a different vision and a different vocabulary and a different set of tenets, which all basically come down to what you said, Michael. You treat other people the way you want to be treated. Not because you want a reward for it, but because it's right. As the words of the Lord's Prayer say at the very beginning, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. It's not about bash the other guy because he doesn't believe what I do. It's let's make those exalted, beautiful tenets of love the law of earth as much as they are the law of heaven. And I don't think Jesus said that as a prayer when he was asked, how do we pray? As a means of saying, oh, well, this is the way I do it, so you have to do it my way. What he said and what he implied was, this is the way we all speak with our Father. This is what we say. This is how we talk to the Father of us all. And if someone else talks to the heavenly deity in a slightly different form with Om Mani Padme Om, it's what's in the heart more than it is what's in the words. The words are an expression of the feeling and the belief. That, the underlying feeling and belief, will always be where we are, whether it's school, the office, the fire station, the bathroom, the kitchen, the backyard, the bus, or in our car. It's that understanding that needs to be made clear, that you can't eliminate God from school simply by saying we can't all pray the same prayer together. God can't be eliminated, not by humanity. He can eliminate us if he wants to, but not the other way around. So I don't believe that you can point the finger at no God in school creates an Adam Lanza. I think that's absurd, because I doubt very much that he was never exposed to any religious beliefs at all. He probably was, but apparently they didn't take. There is no guarantee that hearing about God in any way, shape, or form in a school is going to automatically guarantee that you're going to listen and follow the tenets. It's not. The number of good religious people who go and blow up abortion clinics should tell you that. Or the good religious people who slaughtered thousands in the name of Catholicism in the reign of Mary of England. The burnings of Protestants in Smithfield. Believe me, she went to church every Sunday and twice every Friday. Hearing religious teaching, okay, in school is not going to eradicate the potential evil of the listener. Only the individual is responsible for his own soul. You and I are not responsible for each other's souls. We are responsible for treating one another with respect and dignity and giving one another the love that says, I treat you as I wish to be treated. That's a universal aspect of our spiritual nature. And that we can teach by example and not just precept. The fact that we don't always teach it by example can produce people like the young men who killed their fellow students at Columbine. the kids they killed, who they saw as bullying them and isolating them and denigrating them, probably went to church too. You cannot make religion the scapegoat for the evil acts of an individual, either as a preventative or cure-all, or as the evil that drove him to it, any more than you can make a gun responsible for someone's desire to kill. They are equally dangerous in the wrong hands, ladies and gentlemen. And they are equally inexcusable reasons why we need to do something or other in school with them. I believe sincerely and deeply in God. I have ever since I was old enough to articulate it. I try to live my life the way I was taught, that I treat others the way I wish to be treated, that if someone needs help, I offer my help, that if someone disagrees with me, I give them the right to do so, but I also reserve the right to disagree with them. I believe that my purpose in life is to try to do and be the best I can. I believe that I can care for my fellow human beings, but I am not obligated to like all of them. Liking and loving are not the same thing. Treat them with respect, yes. Allow them to shoot me because they believe differently than I? No. Allow them to shoot my husband? No. My grandchildren? No. What religion and spirituality have to do with the tragedy is not the lack of them in our public schools. It's the lack of recognition that they are part of us and are necessary throughout our lives, and we learn them at home from childhood up. And as we grow, we expand our understanding of what we have been taught. And we may choose a path differently from that we were taught. But if we were taught that basic tenet, that our first duty is to treat others as we wish to be treated, whatever spiritual path we follow, we will not stray too far from what is good and what is right. That aspect of religion you can teach in school all you want. The understanding that acts like that committed by Adam Lanza were evil and cruel and wrong, and that there is no excuse or reason that can justify or condone them. That is one of the fundamental lessons we learn from something like this. The other is, as I said earlier, that there are way more good, kind, compassionate, decent human beings on earth than there are people who would do such things. And that, realistically, we cannot make life perfectly safe for anyone. We can do the best we can to minimize the risk to ourselves, our families, and our children. But when tragedy strikes, we must learn what we can, fix what we can, and go on. And we must never, ever exploit the deaths of innocents to fulfill or gain political power. If we learn those things and try to teach them to our kids and explain them to our children in ways that they can understand depending on their age and development, and let them know that there are more loving people in the world than there are evil ones, we will have taken the best from one of the worst happenings we could ever see. There will be people who will constantly look for someone to blame, someone to be responsible. The mental health system, gun control, the boy's mother who owned guns. She may very well have kept them locked up and thought he didn't know where the key was. And he did, and he got them, and he killed her before he killed those kids. We can blame the school for not having armed guards at the doors. We can blame the lack of public prayer. We can blame whoever it was that was his doctor or therapist or counselor or psychologist. We can point fingers all we wish, but there's no way that we can ultimately exonerate the individual who commits a heinous act from the responsibility for doing it. Whatever the reason, whatever the motivation, whatever the illness, whatever the societal pressure, it still comes down to that particular person. They choose to do what they do. If they die in the process, then they are facing a greater judge than we are. If they don't, we have a machinery of law to deal with the criminality and to punish the perpetrator. There is a foolish idea that police prevent crime. They don't. Police forces are designed to apprehend perpetrators of crime. More police, more guards, more guns, etc., etc. Yes, they might minimize the risk, but they will never eliminate it completely. Because ultimately we are eternally, individually responsible for our choices. And that is another lesson that we must learn from tragedies like this, and we must teach our children. We cannot allow them to grow up to play the blame game, that everything bad that they do is somebody else's fault. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for being with us this evening. And I'm sorry I've lost the ability to see the chat room or to answer any more calls because my computer has decided to lock up on me. But with a little luck, we'll all be here, in spite of the Mayan calendar, for next Thursday's show, which will be just after, I hope, what will be a beautiful and joyful Christmas for all of you. And I hope those of you who are Jewish have had a wonderful Hanukkah with family and friends and light and joy that will last the entire year. And those who celebrate Kwanzaa, believe in the goodness that you hold within and use that as your light to follow. For everybody out there listening in the chat room and out in the ether of the internet, thank you for joining me this evening. And please visit us at www.patriotfamilies.com, where you'll meet a wonderful group of people who truly believe that we are the nation, and are there to help one another try to make this wonderful land of ours continue to be a beacon of hope for the entire world. I wish you Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, Happy Hanukkah, and joy and peace in your life forever. Good night, everyone, and thanks again for joining.
Sorry, Terry, thank you for having me.
You're more than welcome always, Robert. And if Michael,
okay,
if you're still there, thank you for calling in, dear heart. And all the family in the chat room, thanks again for your support, your kindness, and your love. Good night, everyone. Take care.
Night, Terry. Bye-bye.
Night.